There's two things I can say about the sound versus other components. One is I think it kind of sounds like an Accuphase amp, which is amazing because this is not as expensive as Accuphase and it's easier to fit on a shelf. It's nowhere near as big. It has got that kind of big, rich, effortless sound. DeVore Fidelity, the show partner of Not an Audiophile, the podcast. DeVore Fidelity has become one of the most acclaimed high-end companies in the world. And having heard the loudspeakers many times, I know why. They're all still handcrafted in Brooklyn, New York. We love how this iconic brand captures the excitement and breath of the sound. Nothing brings you closer to the music than DeVore Fidelity. For a retailer near you, visit DeVoreFidelity.com. We are back, Not an Audiophile, the podcast, episode 49. Today we are reviewing the Exposure 5510 Integrated and speaking to the designer, Tony Brady. The Exposure 5510 Integrated Amplifier, Exposure Electronics' most expensive integrated amplifier and their newest. I recently had the pleasure of listening to it for some weeks at home on our Delacord 70S loudspeakers powered by the name Unity Star Streamer section. In fact, that opened up a possibility of comparing the inbuilt integrated amp section in the Star against the Exposure. And for me, I don't know what do I always think when I'm listening to review, the guy's about to rave, lady is about to rave about the product they're talking about. But I'm going to. I guess when you review something and it's god-awful, you just sort of put it down in the bottom drawer, send it back to the supplier, what have you, and we'll never speak of it again. This is not the case with the Exposure. It's a delight. In fact, as a name fan of many, many years, I have to say I'd much prefer to listen to the Exposure. The name is taut. It's a little kind of recessed in the top end. It's, as we know, fast, and I say taut in the bass. The Exposure is everything the name isn't. It's layered, it's detailed. The bass is got this beautiful articulation and weight and extension, which the name kind of lacks. It's got a real charm to the sound. It's sweet. Does it sound like other Exposure amps? Absolutely. And I think when we speak to Tony, we find out why. Because there is a history. He doesn't start with a clean sheet of paper. He starts with an existing design and improves it. But I'll let him tell us that in his own words. But I love the sound. It is exactly what I just said. I'm not going to go on and on about it. You have to listen to it. The problem with hi-fi is that when you get past entry-level equipment and you're looking for genuine improvements, you are going to have to go and listen to things or borrow them or somehow get them into your system. A helpful dealer will allow you to hear this amplifier on similar loudspeakers to your own, and you should be able to. And maybe at that point you can try it at home, but it is a delight. I felt, it was one of those products that I did not want to give back. The less expensive Exposures start from $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. So, you know, don't feel like we're talking about a brand that only makes expensive products. In fact, Exposure's kind of the opposite. It's a very value for money orientated company. The stayed appearance is part of that equation. The hardware they make the amplifiers with is very similar across the range. This helps to keep costs down. The small footprint, the relatively thin case, makes it easier to ship and therefore less expensive. There's less raw materials. You don't have to fill the front panel up with VU meters. Or something, otherwise it becomes a very plain box. It is full inside, and we'll talk about that after we speak to Tony, the designer, when I pull the lid off and have a look and actually see what is inside. But the key features Tony will also tell us about, but I'll just summarise them here. There is no standby circuit. It is a hard power switch on-off. So when it's off, it's absolutely off. There is a remote control for volume. It works very well. You can set up in the menu. There is a display on the front panel. You can set the switch on volume control. The battery flap is very hard to get off the remote. I spent 10 times longer trying to get the batteries in the remote than I did to plug the amplifier in and get some music out of it. To get music out of it, you apply power, an input source, a pair of speakers via two pairs of banana sockets. So when I say two pairs, they're not switchable either. So yeah, it's if you by wiring, you can just have literally two sets of cables. You don't have to join the amplifier pair together, if anyone still does by wiring. So I said hard power switch, just banana sockets, a remote for volume and a few other functions, you know, such as mute and input select. Lots of spare buttons you'll never use. The battery flap is hard to get off. Lever it down with your thumb, as you normally would, and then flick it out from the bottom on the thin edge of the base of the remote. That's what my notes tell me. That's how I eventually got it open. Put the batteries in, it works really well. You can read the display from the couch because of it's, you know, quite a large attenuation readout. So you do know where your volume's at if you've flicked it to another input. So you don't flick to the right input and suddenly it's super loud. And it just sounds wonderful. It's rich, layered, detailed, clean, sweet. It's all those good things, but probably the most useful... there's two things I can say about the sound versus other components. One is I think it kind of sounds like an Accuphase amp, which is amazing because this is not as expensive as Accuphase and it's easier to fit on a shelf. It's nowhere near as big. It has got that kind of big, rich, effortless sound that I feel like Accuphase has a lot of the time. I think there's a precision to the sound of the exposure, maybe. No, I'm not going to say superior. That's a bridge too far, but you need to have a listen. Not that a $30,000 or $20,000 Accuphase is on your shopping list when you're looking at an exposure 5510. It's a more exuberant, lively, bigger sound than the name. The name is perhaps more precise, but it's ultimately, with this loudspeaker synergy, it's ultimately a little dry, cold, and uninteresting, and the exposure's not. So, yeah, a little bit of synergy with the Delacorde 70S that we used for this review. A 6.5 two-way, large-ish box, quite a neutral speaker, but the sound was thoroughly enjoyable with that loudspeaker with the 5510. Look, I think we'll speak to Tony. He answers a number of my questions about how this amplifier was developed and what's inside the box. And then after we speak to Tony, I'll lift the lid and describe what I found, the quality of the components, the general layout, the way it appears, what I could see in there. And, of course, there's pictures of that internal exploration on the webpage for this episode. Thanks for listening. Let's talk to Tony. March Audio. March Audio is a proud episode sponsor of the Not an Audiophile podcast. With a mission to provide superb technical performance and exceptional sound at modest prices, Alan March has designed a range of power amplifiers, a preamplifier, and a selection of stunning loudspeakers that you should check out now at marchaudio.com. Well, when I spoke to you at Munich earlier last year, you told me that really it'll be better than the 3510, but I think it's quite a lot better actually, and certainly that's what I'm telling people. So you sort of were playing it down, yeah. But I mean that's kind of your way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because yeah. People may get confused because the outlook is not so very different to a 3510. The casework is the same,
yes,
except for the front panel.
Yeah.
But the internal construction's different. And the transformer's uprated a little bit. Power is up a little bit, but not very much. But the power amplifier is modified. It compared to a 3510 integrated or stereo, it has a DC servo like we put in our mono amplifiers.
Okay.
And that gives you a very good tight bottom end.
It does.
So it saves having a feedback capacitor in the loop in the signal path effectively. So, it sounds better.
It absolutely does. And it's one of my comments. So I should point out to the audience that I've listened to this without speaking to Tony. I borrowed the amp from the local distributor. He was very kind to loan it to me. And the things that I noticed that I wrote down were exactly that, the delicacy and the accuracy and yes, the grip of the bottom end, and it's kind of the extension in the bottom end. I don't know whether that's got much to do with
well, you sort of get a more extended bottom end, but you don't just want lots and lots of bass.
No.
It mumbles along. You want a nice tight bass, so the mid-range is clear.
Well, it does both of those things, and that is exactly what my notes say, is that the bass is not exaggerated. It's completely real, accurate, but it has this way about it that's just kind of effortless and clean, I guess. And of course,
I'll tell you a good test. Sure. Put a small pair of speakers on it.
Yeah.
And that's, if you put a small pair of speakers on a big amplifier, you get to hear what the thing's really doing.
Well, actually, that's
shows it up.
It's kind of actually what we've done. I used our own range of Delacorde loudspeakers, used our most inexpensive model, a 6.5 two-way. But it's in quite a large-ish box. It's a wide baffle, sort of old-school sort of loudspeaker. And the matching, it just I've never heard them sound as delightful. Sounds a bit weird saying that about
even at low level.
Product. Absolutely. Talking about the mid-range, there's a real delicacy, there's layers of information. There's a cleanliness, but lacks sterility. It's just it's a typical exposure amp, I should say. And I guess my question to you should be, what is the exposure sound, do you think? And do you, I mean, to me, it's such an honest.
Difficult.
Well, they're an honest sounding amplifier. They're not particularly coloured.
Yeah.
No. Is it the way
they're
you?
Neutral. They don't have to emphasize anything.
No. They just let everything that comes in
open,
through. Open.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a nice open amplifier. Tight bass, clean treble is what I'm trying to go for.
I mean, it's not
exaggerated. Not rolled off too much.
No, is the recipe as simple as that? As far as your goals, I take it.
Essentially, because when you design these things, well, I can see the sound. I know what it sounds like when I'm drawing it.
Wow. See, this is why I wanted to speak to you, because you seem to know this. I say to people, he knows the sound of every transistor that he uses. Is that a decent thing to say about your knowledge of?
Well, I've never listened to every transistor individually. I used to do stupid things like that. It takes a lot of time.
Well, yeah.
And it's not very useful in the end of the day, because you have to make an amplifier consisting of a lot of parts and you've got to listen to all of them.
Yes.
Of course, resistors we listen to sometimes. Capacitors, yes. Depends on whether we put certain things in certain positions. It works very well. And other things you could put standard parts, it makes no difference.
Yeah.
So you don't have to sort of make some product so it's very, very expensive just because you put a lot of expensive parts in it, which don't do nothing.
Exactly.
You know, that's what I got against boutique amplifiers full of, really expensive parts. And you think, well, still don't sound any good because your circuit's shit. Basically. So, we build amplifiers from good parts, give us good reliability. And the more expensive amplifiers have better parts in signal path, for example.
Yes.
And those we have listened to. And of course, when you've got a portfolio of amplifiers or units, what it's going to sound like anyway, to a degree.
Yeah.
Because nothing's brand new. So, you're only continuing on from something else.
Yeah, so you're
either going up
or down. So
it works both ways.
You're refining ideas that you've been using for probably many years, I would assume. Getting back to that comment you made about you feel you know how it's going to sound as you're drawing the circuit. What can you tell me about that?
Well, it's just that there are certain elements that get going, that sound good. DC servo is just one example.
Yeah.
But the circuit structure. A lot of it's common between amplifiers anyway, but then as you go up in the range, it gets more refined, more complicated as well. But so you've got lower figures, lower distortion, things like this.
Yep.
And that's why you do it. But of course, they've got their own challenges because they're more complicated circuits, so take more work sorting out. But as you're drawing them, either the circuit or the circuit board.
Yes.
And sometimes I think, oh, I've got some space there to do something else. And I stick something in because it's all manual drawn. It's not CAD as such. I do use the CAD manually.
Yeah, okay.
It's because I used to tape up layouts. So I don't do auto-routing at all.
Oh, no. You don't yet.
All the tracks on the board, they're short as it can be.
Yeah.
You can individually space them as you want, away from power lines, if it's signals, and things like that. But as you're drawing it, you already know the sound, because that's why you're drawing it in a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're drawing the circuit to sound a certain way, and you know what elements of circuits you need in there. And sometimes you can get a bit more in, and sometimes you have to put something in there because it doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
But that's all part of it. But basically, I can see the sound, or I already know.
It's amazing.
And that's just experience, really.
Well, speaking...
it's not the first amplifier. The first amplifier, you do all the work and do all the struggling.
Yes.
As you
yes.
go on.
Yes, yes,
yes. You know, it sort of kind of gets easier.
So just to put a point on that, so I don't know when you drew up or designed your first amplifier, but was it in the very early 80s or some... Well, you prefer not to say.
Oh, no, this was in the 70s.
In the
70s. I designed a power amplifier.
Yeah.
In a pub when I was 16. Because we'd been to the college lecture in the morning. We'd been talking about transistor amplifiers, and I thought, well, I'll just go and draw one. I never made it, but it was an exercise, interesting exercise anyway. And it kind of went from there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Drinking and drawing.
Well, there is there might be the difference between you and I, because when I was sitting in a classroom at 16 years of age learning about transistor amplifiers, I had a lot of trouble remembering how that thing worked. And you went off down the pub, had five beers and drew one up that no doubt would have worked if you'd built it. I guess that's why you build amplifiers for a living. And I don't. I just fix the bastards. So to zip back to the 5510 for a second. So this is kind of currently your latest piece of work from when you started in the late 70s.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's a late one.
It's not an inexpensive amplifier. In this country, I think it's about $9,000 or something, which, you know, I guess is over. Does it sell in the UK for about £4,500 or something like that?
Yeah, £4,600.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So it's, but on the other hand, the way it sounds, I mean, it's a bit of a bargain.
Deceptive.
It is very deceptive. It's actually...
Well, we did a lot of work.
Yeah.
Work on noise and distortion, hum and noise, particularly on the boards.
Yeah.
So, you know, the way you just see an amplifier, there's things you're not seeing. Well, some of it's in the layout, how you do it. You had to make it quieter, for example. So, you know, there's a lot of extra work in things in terms of that. But the circuit's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, yeah. But you've, versus a 3510 integrated, you've added what, but you mentioned the DC servo and the output stage.
Yeah.
There's other differences.
Yeah, the relay attenuator, of course.
Preamp
is a slightly, the preamp is a slightly different circuit. It's more refined. And the power supply is more refined as well. And the layout of the amplifier, I don't know if you took the lid off or not.
I'm going to.
But
yeah,
on the...
Yeah, I'm going to. Well, I mean,
on the RCA sockets, you'll see that we've used another board at the back and the relays are on there.
Okay.
So there's no wiring.
Oh,
so
okay. So the relay switching for the input is actually right next to the input socket.
Almost all of it, yes, except for the Phono board,
which
has to stay on the main board.
Yes.
But you'll see this when you take it apart in reference to the 3510 integrated. You'll see the difference there.
Yeah, okay. We all know a great hi-fi system is more than the sum of the parts. Compatibility is really hard to find, but it is possible, and a well-curated, well-crafted system is pure pleasure. Let Hey Now Hi-Fi use their experience to help you experience that pure pleasure. HeyNowHiFi.com.au. And we are back. Hey, stepped attenuators... I'm sure there's a right way to do it.
There are several ways to do it.
Yeah.
I prefer a complicated one, but for reduction, it's not. You don't want that. So the old MCX, we did a 15 relay attenuator on each channel.
Yeah.
So yeah, And that had less steps than we've got in a 5510.
Okay,
the 5510's got seven relays.
Okay, and so you...
They're good quality gold parts. They're actual mechanical relays, not reeds. We used reeds in the MCX before.
Okay, now, are these then switched in a sort of a combination that allows you to
Yes, they program... are. It has to be mapped.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Essentially, it was there's 99 steps.
Yeah, okay.
For 1 dB. They're not accurate 1 dB's in the step size, but they are pretty accurate between channels.
Well, that's probably the joy of a step attenuator, isn't it? When you say pretty accurate, you mean
exactly right,
you mean pretty much completely accurate, really, because I guess the differences in the resistors are averaged out to some degree because of the combinations. Is that sort of...
That's right.
Yeah. So it's probably...
Yes, just standard 1% and 1% parts.
Yeah.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, yeah. Because, see, I guess this is what this amplifier is. It's just a refinement in a number of areas over other designs. And, of course, an improvement in, like you say, power and other assets, like quality of components. But is there probably... It sounds like there's at least 10 or 15 subtle little... And some of them not subtle, like the stepped attenuator, but there's these little subtleties add up to a big thing at the end of the day.
That's right, yeah.
It's,
but they're not immediately visible.
Well, so here's the thing. The listeners like, but I've just looked up exposure on the website and all of the amps look the same. And, of course, that's, I mean, of course they are, because what you're trying to do, I think, from an outsider's point of view, is that you're trying to create an amplifier that offers the greatest performance for the least or the most sensible amount of money. So one way of doing that is to keep the casework obviously very similar across the range. Is that part of...
Yes.
Part it is, yeah.
Yes, so we've got to... Because we had two ways of going with this amplifier. It was either big and stupid and heavy.
Yes.
Or more standard. And we chose the more standard route because, well, we can pick it up because we're all getting older.
Yeah,
and the customers are getting old in some ways.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we would have built a 35-kilo monster.
Yeah, and that which
but practically, you know, if you do that, then you've got to have new metalwork,
yes,
new packing, et cetera, goes on.
Yeah, and you can't ship
whereas
as many.
This one, we had
yes,
a new front panel.
Yep.
New transformer, new boards, of course. But basically, it's still following on from the other models.
Yeah, look, it makes...
So it makes it more affordable anyway. Yeah. And actually, it's more practical.
Well, I mean, it is more practical because it's quite a lump, but you can easily grab hold of it and move it around. And I don't know what it weighs, but I'm going to guess and say it weighs, I don't know, 10 or 12 kilos or something like that. Maybe it's not quite that, but it feels... It's a very solid little unit.
It's a bit more than 12. I think it's 12 or 13.
Oh, well, I'll edit that bit out and say it's 12.
Yeah,
call it 14. But it's a sturdy little, it's a solid little lump. The controls feel beautiful. It's a really nice, beautifully finished off piece, but ultimately it's for those that want, you know, function over form, I guess. Is that, I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, because that's what it
does. Well, you can do a lot of good things, you know, a lot of all-round things, because, of course, you can put the new DAC card in it, which is common to the 3510 as well, and also either the MC or the MM or DAC card, basically it's choice of one, which one you want. But it can make it very flexible like that. You've got one almost all in one unit. If you've got a small streamer and you've got the DAC board in it,
yes,
you're away.
Indeed.
For not really that much money.
No, not when you start looking around. I mean, I don't know whether I'm going to say it right now. I can always edit it out, I guess. But I felt that the sound was, and you may take this as an insult because you might think that Accuphase is a terrible sounding product, but
it's really, really, really well built.
It is well built, and
I watched their video that's on YouTube.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's rather interesting.
Well, they do take everything to extreme, don't they, as far as the care and the how pretty it is and how it all clips together. But they do have a kind of a nice sound, a sort of a well-rounded, a big, you know, sense of scale and sort of a sense of delicacy and cleanness of the sound. And yours has got all of that at about a third of the price, but I'm not sure I'm going to leave that in this recording. But I'm just saying, you know, like I say, you may not have listened to a piece of Accuphase recently, and I haven't listened to any for a couple of months, but when I did last listen to some, I got the same feeling of just kind of effortlessness, and I don't know, it's this audio vocabulary that we have is sometimes left wanting, and I can't really describe it. People need to go and listen to it, and I guess that's what you would say, is that, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you just got to go and have a listen. Any other thoughts, Tony, on exposure in general? You mentioned you're working on the pre-power of this same...
Well, I finished working on it. That's just got to get into production now. Okay. And there's a DAC as well, which is not on the website yet. We're revamping the website very shortly.
Okay.
And so all the new products will be on there anyway.
So the new DAC, it's a freestanding DAC, not the board that you plug into the 5510 integrated or
no, it's freestanding.
Yeah,
no, it's got the top end AKM DAC in it.
Have you got? While we've got you on the phone, and you're a hard man to get on the phone, so I might as well ask every question that I've ever had. Have you got any thoughts on that DAC and why you use that chipset, or is it? It gives you the sound you want, I guess.
Well, it gives
you
the sound we want. I think it's the best chipset around.
Okay.
At the moment, so we're using AKM in everything.
Right.
They're very nice. They sound nice, and they're very easy to implement. So that's good.
Yep.
The DAC choice changed during the life of the design because their factory burnt down. So luckily we didn't have a production model. So that changed the chipset afterwards.
Yes.
And we basically waited. And during that time, of course, we put the OLED display on that one, and that was actually the first product to have it. And the amplifiers got it next. But all the display work was done on the DAC. And when we could get chips, and then we could get the boards made and all the rest of it, that's led to the DAC coming out the second after the integrated. It's actually out now, although it's not on our website yet. And then the pre-power will be out, I think, maybe February. It's well late, but it should be February.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here slightly slack-jawed because your output, I mean, you are the guy, right? You don't have a secret team of elves hiding in the back cupboard.
No.
So can you describe your workplace? Is it very French or is it, I don't know.
I don't know how you describe a French bench.
Well,
it's not full of cheese knives and empty wine glasses.
Well, that's where my imagination goes, because you think...
Yes.
You think, I mean, yeah, Tony lives in France most of the times these days, basically because he can't get enough cheap good wine or cheese.
And it's cheap around here.
Brisbane Hi-Fi. I mean, the clue is kind of in the title. The store is located in Brisbane and they sell hi-fi. But it's not just another hi-fi store. It's kind of like some kind of tropical weekend away in paradise. The people are friendly. There's lots of interesting things to see and listen to in this case. And the drinks are tasty. I highly recommend Brisbane Hi-Fi for a different hi-fi purchasing experience. BrisbaneHiFi.com.au.
I had other questions, and I don't want to hold you up. I know you've got a big day planned. You've got all that cheese and wine to get through, but can we just do a little bit of history? So you got involved with exposure 20-something years ago or something?
25 years ago.
So from 2000 onwards, you've been the brains behind the brand. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I mean, the early amplifiers, like the 2010, was not me.
Yep.
The amplifier, the integrated amplifier, the 2010, and the power amp was someone else.
Yes.
But I came on board, actually, just help out with some other job as well.
Yeah.
But I sorted out the exposure at the same time, because there was some little issues to to be worked on, and I sort of just re-engineered it a little bit. And then someone else did the CD player that came along.
Yes, okay.
And then I did more engineering work on that. And then afterwards, of course, we made the classics, or the new classics.
Yes.
And they were like a revision of what John had already done.
Yeah.
So the 28 power amplifier was basically two 18s in a box.
Yes.
With two transformers, and tied it up a little bit, and some better protection circuit that actually worked.
Yes, yeah.
Rather than the old ones. And then the preamp was just reduced the gain compared to a 21, and then we put a phono card in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it made a nice little package like that. And then after that, as more I did, the more I changed it, essentially.
There's a reason why I ask, and that's because a while ago in my little repair enterprise, someone brought in an amplifier and they said, you designed it. And I think it was called a Onyx or something, or what?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
I started Onyx in the late 70s.
Yeah, okay.
With Craig Hill, who owned a shop in Brighton.
Yes.
And we started, mate, we just, how it started was really, is I went to buy a Lin from him because I couldn't get a Riga at that time. There was a waiting list. So in the 6 months' time, I saved up some money, bought a Lin from Craig.
Yeah, okay.
Him and his dad brought it around. And then that was, of course, Lin with a Grace on it, the Grace arm, but I couldn't afford the cartridge. Of course, I was going for the Supex.
Yes, of course.
And so the next year, I went in for the Supex and didn't have it in stock. He lent me a Elite.
Yeah.
Cartridge, Max Townsend, and I had that for about a month till the Supex came in. And then I bought a Lentec headlamp, which was kind of all right, but it ran on batteries and it was a bit noisy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I made one. And I took it into Craig, so I made this. Oh, that's interesting. And we ended up making 20 of them.
Okay.
But in that time, we started working on, he was good at graphic design, and he worked out sort of a case.
Yeah.
And we knocked up 3 power at that time.
Okay.
And of course, that became an integrated, which was the first OE20, which we made in 1981.
Okay. Now.
And then we quickly stretched that, because it was quite difficult to make, and that became the classic OE21 in 1982.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned this, A, to allow you to, show off, as you should. But also because it sounded so much like a current exposure. Like it sounded, it just had a similar way about it. Now, did I make that up in my head, or is there similar?
Well, you might have done, but no.
There's similar design ideas? Yeah, I mean, it was a smaller scale.
Yeah, it's an extension of.
It had tiny little output devices in it.
They weren't that small. They were 15 amp
power
transistors.
Oh, I thought they had the same.
Yeah, they were metal.
I thought they had the same.
No, they were TO3 metals.
Not in the one I looked at, though. No, they definitely weren't TO3.
I know
you
had an OE20 stroke 2 or an OE22, which had BD911 912s in there and TO220 power transistors.
Yes.
And that was a 30-watt amplifier.
Yes, that is exactly it. And there's something about those smaller case devices do you think there's anything in that, or am I imagining that as well, that they just kind of sound...
Well, they look great, don't they? They look cute. They sound good anyway.
Well, I mean, like, you're like, these things are going to explode in a second, aren't they? But they don't. I mean, like the Cyrus 1...
No, no, they don't. Well, it's completely different.
Different.
First Onyx would drive isobarics. So it was never going to go bang.
No.
And we made the soap power supply to drive Cyrus.
Is that right?
Yeah, because Craig sold him in the shop.
Okay. Yeah, rightio. So there was quite a strong Lin connection. So that's because people, I mean, there's such a, so you've got the Lin name, not the Lin name, the name exposure.
Yeah, yeah.
People talk about it in the same sentence sometimes as like, name did this and exposure did that, and they were kind of on a parallel path to some degree. But when you were doing the Onyx, it is Onyx, isn't it? O-N-I-X or something, is it?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. You actually were quite connected to the hip with Lin as well, but But sort of through the back door via this retailer in Brighton.
Only through using the product.
Connection. No, not implying any kind of connection to the company itself, but to the product and building an amplifier that would drive them properly. I mean, because Isobarics and Saras,
which Linden failed to do miserably with their first amplifier.
Yes. I'm trying to. What was that? Is that like the LK something?
LK 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
So, what a disappointment. We thought this is going to sound great, but it did.
So you had the. Because I guess the Saras and the Isobarics are quite both low in impedance, but also, I don't know, are they a bit all over the place or something, phase and impedance curve wise or something? I don't know. But they're difficult to drive, right? Hence,
the SAR is worse.
The SAR is
worse. It's like 1.8 ohms.
Holy
mackerel. The SAR is worse. I blew a set up once because I was trying to play it louder because it wouldn't play loud enough for me.
No.
Because I had Isobarics. I had a Triapps active system since about 1981.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, that goes quite loud.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Tony Brady, for your time on this early call that you've made. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Okay, good to talk to you, Andrew.
Find the sound of your life by crafting a quality stereo system with the Hi-Fi Shop, featuring all the brands you know and love: Riga turntables, Bowers and Wilkins loudspeakers, Exposure Electronics amplifiers and CD players from the UK, and of course Sonos Faber loudspeakers from Italy. The Hi-Fi Shop helps you create your sound. Visit the team at hifishop.com.au. Well, it's all very well listening to something and enjoying it, but in this case, we want to look a little more closely and with an educated eye, take a look under the lid and see what's there. So four screws gets you inside the Exposure 5510. I noticed on the outside before I pulled it apart, it's made in the UK, which I'm not sure that we mentioned anywhere, but in fact all Exposure products are made in the UK. So there's a Union Jack emblazoned on the box, and also the product is made there, which is kind of nice. So as I say, lid removes easily, and I guess that's because you can fit, or your dealer can fit, perhaps preferably the aftermarket or additional or optional phono stage or DAC board. So there's no point making the lid like certain brands of amplifier 27 screws deep just to get the lid off, and why shouldn't they make it easy? What's in there is not unattractive at all. Simple, straightforward. There's no extra BS in there. For some reason, modern amplifiers so often seem to have circuit board upon circuit board of surface mount components sitting there under the vents waiting to be covered in humidity and dust and I guess salt if you live near the sea, and then corrode away, and that's the end of that. Now, that's not the case here. This is a very simple circuit board. It's not clustered in components. Yes, there is some surface mount components, but it's not tiny, and it's highly unlikely to be as easily corroded as most. There isn't a huge amount of ventilation. The ventilation is sparse, centered directly over the large heatsink, and it is a large heatsink. Lots of aluminium there. And interestingly, the aluminium lid is super light, completely unlike, once again, a lot of other amplifiers that use a heavy, sort of mild steel lid with, you know, half a brick glued to it just to give the amp some heft. In this case, the heft of this amplifier, as discussed with Tony, is about 13, 14 kilos. It is all in the rather expensive components inside, obviously mostly the chunky toroidal transformer. So, big heatsink, big toroidal, big filtering capacitors, made in the UK. Sorry, made in Europe, I should say. Other rather, you know, immediately obviously high quality components: Toshiba transistors and Elner capacitors abound. As I mentioned, some surface mount components. It's hard to get away from. That's literally how electronics are made these days. And for the obvious reason, you can get a circuit board assembled by a robot very rapidly. Interestingly, some of the other boards hidden away, the
the stepped attenuator board under the main board, which is not clearly visible once you first lift the lid off. You have to look sideways and there it is. There is a sneaky photo on the website, on our website, notanaudiophile.com, where you can see these inside photos, and you'll see the stepped attenuator board under the main board, and then of course there's the rear board Tony alluded to in the interview, with the relay right, relays, you know, switching the inputs right there at the socketry. Speaking of socketry, good quality socketry, individual sockets, not some plastic array of PC mounted sockets. They're proper screwed down sockets, the RCA inputs I'm referring to and outputs, and the aforementioned banana sockets, at a glance appear to be UK made ones from that company that I've managed to forget the name of, but they're not an inexpensive piece. Very good quality. In fact, everything in here looks like it will last a long time. I guess that kind of wraps it up. It's a simple, straightforward, or should I say deceptively simple, straightforward, actually quite complex amplifier, much more so than some of the more entry-level. Well, there's only two other integrators in the range, right? So the 2000 series ones is quite straightforward. 3500, 3510, a little bit more so. This is an all-out effort, as Tony alluded to. Quality, simplicity, careful design, no BS. Premium components. Keep it simple, make it affordable. Let's face it, we're building this thing to listen to music, not sort of explore the wonders of electronic engineering. All right, thank you, folks. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate you tuning in. I will be back next episode, episode 5050, a half century. Who would have thought it? Talk to you then. And a big thank you to StereoNet and Soundstage Australia for their continuing support of this podcast. StereoNet has probably one of the most popular audio-related forums in the world, and the classifieds are amazing. All sorts of gear comes up for sale. And, of course, reviews, news articles, etc., which is well worth a look. Soundstage Australia, Edgar Kramer, writes a magnificent, highly detailed and careful review. Great photography, interesting products. And over at soundstageaustralia.com, you can see those. So stereonet.com, soundstageaustralia.com. Have a look now.